So, just to refresh everyone's memory, what we saw last time, what we were talking about, we saw the Gemara in Lulav HaGazel that introduces the concept of Mitzvah HaBaba Avera, and we discussed that potentially the scope of the concept could have been far-reaching, but maybe because of the Yerushalmi, all the Rishonim tend to narrow the scope of Mitzvah HaBaba Avera. The first way they narrow it, we saw through the Yerushalmi, was that it is an object-based concept, meaning that the Avera has to be connected. If the object of the mitzvah was connected to the Avera, then Mitzvah HaBaba Avera applies. However, if it was more vague, if it wasn't the gufa of the Avera that brought you to the mitzvah, the concept does not apply. So, for example, the example the Yerushalmi first cited had to do with tearing kriya. That if you tear kriya, if you have a mitzvah to tear kriya, and you do it in a way that wouldn't have been permissible, let's say, that creates a chilul Shabbos, you tear kriya on Shabbos, you still get the kiyum mitzvah of tearing kriya. Because Shabbos, the Avera, isn't the goof of the mitzvah, you know. Whereas if you tear kriya on a stolen garment, where there the garment itself is the goof of the Avera, the Avera is connected to the goof of the mitzvah, so that would be a case of Mitzvah HaBaba Avera, where you are not mekayim the mitzvah of tearing kriya. So with lulav, clearly, if you steal a lulav, you know, the lulav is the gufa, and therefore the Avera nullifies the mitzvah. That's what the Yerushalmi talked about. We were about to deal with Rashi, which we're going to talk about, and I added some Rishonim because the idea of where else would Mitzvah HaBaba Avera apply, let's say outside of the laws of Gzela, was a big issue we were discussing. So that's one of the main things we're going to look at today as we conclude our discussion. So let's go back to Rashi, which is in the original source packet, source 4. Remember that right before we ended, we read the end of the Gemara about the Avankari and how the merchants were encouraged to let the non-Jews most non-Jews were known to be ganavim of Jewish land often, so let them be the ones to cut off the branches that you use for your lulavs, so that the shinui, the yeish and the shinui happen in their hands. Okay, so Rashi, let's go to the second line of Al Mishanit Lash. Anyone wanna read? Okay, thanks. So that's what we just said, you know, that it would be when the gezel happens when you cut the pri. So therefore, let them do the cutting and give it to you. Sorry, and they'll be the gazlanim.
So also the thing that have yeish also happens in their territory,
right?
Before it gets to you. The afterwards it goes from your property, their property to yours. So he thinks that yeish alone doesn't affect the kinyan. But the pair of them, yeish and change of ownership is koneh. The inami, kani, mitzvah habab avira havei. Or you could say it is koneh, but it's a mitzvah habab avira. Imachem tefuha min hamechubar tiyu atem gozmin.
So Rashi almost presents two ways to understand mitzvah habab avira here. Either that once once you need Shinui Rishut on top of Yeish, because without it, it's not Koneh. And until you're Koneh the object, it's going to be a mitzvah haba be'avera. Or his alternate read, no. Yeish, after Yeish, you are Koneh, but still it's a mitzvah haba be'avera until there's Shinui. Until there's Shinui Rishut. But either way, what is clear is once there is Shinui Rishut, the object is no longer contaminated. So remember, we spoke about this object-based understanding of mitzvah haba be'avera. Does it carry over to other people? Like, does the gzela like stick to the object? So, no, not once there is Shinui and a transfer to the next person. Okay. That kind of sums up the object base. Now I said we would deal with when does this concept apply? Does it apply beyond Gzela? If not, why? What's the theory behind it? That, I think, is also the more interesting question. So just Tosfot is one of the first that articulates the question. If you skip to source 7... I don't have the Gemara quoted, but this is on the Gemara that talks about a sukkah gzela, a sukkah that you steal, and it brings a pasuk with the word lachem to prove that you're not allowed to steal a sukkah, that a stolen sukkah is invalid. So Tosfot asks on this Gemara, Hahumi vai le lemute gzula. The word lachem comes to exclude a sukkah gzula. Tema. Tepagle mishum dehave le mitzvah ba'avera. De mihai tama paslina netro gagazel biyom tov sheni lekaman beresh lulav hagazel. So the question is, why does the Gemara have to bring a pasuk? Why doesn't the Gemara just say, why can't you have a stolen sukkah? Why is it invalid? Mitzvah haba be'avera. What do you think? What's different? But it does seem that here. Right? You do accomplish... Anyone have any ideas on why would a stolen lulav be puzzled because of mitzvah haba be'avera, but a stolen sukkah require a pasuk? Or the Gemara bring a pasuk instead of mitzvah haba be'avera. It's very hard to think of a distinction. Yeah.
Maybe because you don't have to sit in your own sukkah. So, like, even though, you could, in potential, think that someone who stole the sukkah was planning on giving it back, because there's a control show the das or something like that. And so he still yielded the mitzvah in someone else's sukkah. Whereas, I mean, this is still a thing, is that issue of, is it a shinui rishus or is it...
Right. No, what you're saying is really good, and we're going to get to it. It's sort of my source number 6. The Ravid says something very similar to you. So anyone else? Any other ideas before we start learning them? Okay, well, the first we'll read Tosfot's actual answer. That'll be our first suggestion. So let's just read Tosfot here. V'yesh lomar d'tama d'mitzvah haba be'avera lav de'oraita ela de'rabanan. The concept of mitzvah de'oraita, of mitzvah haba be'avera, is not de'oraita, it's a de'rabanan concept. And I think the way you have to understand what Tosfot writes here, excuse my crazy nail polish, by the way, my daughter and I had a little bet, so... Anyway, I promised she would be able to choose, so this is the results, you know. She's 5, you know. So mitzvah haba be'avera, not only you'd have to read Tosfot as saying that it is applied in derabanan cases, not d'oraita. Why? Anyone know why? How is lulav derabanan and sukkah d'oraita? Have you ever heard this?
Lulav, the next phase of sukkah, only is d'oraita.
Exactly. Bizman Beis HaMikdash, it's a mitzvah d'oraita to bring a lulav every day, but when the Beis HaMikdash isn't standing, it's more zecher l'mikdash for every day but the first. So it's lulav is really a mitzvah d'rabbanan that we do not allow you to do due to mitzvah, if it's mitzvah haba be'avera. Sukkah is a mitzvah d'oraita, and therefore, according to Tosfot, you need a special pasuk to say that a mitzvah haba be'avera doesn't apply.
I think it's just in the midrash.
Oh. Correct. Thank you. This is not just a practical distinction that Tosfot's making, but I think that in his own way, he's offering an understanding of mitzvah haba be'avera. Anyone know the term knas?
It's like a fine.
Yeah, taking a fine, or it's like a punishment. But when you think of mitzvah haba be'avera, the question becomes, in theory, should it work from the beginning and only the rabbis are saying it's not going to work? Or does the whole concept not, because it's done through an avera, it's like you didn't even do a masa. It's like nothing, no mitzvah masa happened. Clearly, according to Tosfot, it would be the latter. It's almost like a knas, that which can only be applied in dirabanan situations. Well, how so? Right, but it doesn't. I'm sorry, that's what I meant. But it doesn't like, in theory, you can accomplish something, but the rabbis create a punishment there. That's, yeah. I must have said it backwards. Okay, so that is one answer to where mitzvah haba be'avera should be applied, where it doesn't. By the way, based on our Gemara that we learned, what is one thing that might bother someone about Tosfot's read, d'oraita d'rabbanan? Maybe the answer to why it's not a problem is too obvious to everyone. I don't know. How is mitzvah haba be'avera derived in our Gemara? It is, but that's not, it's derived because we learn the Mishnah about the second days of Sukkot, but that's not the derivation, complete derivation of the concept. Yeah.
It's derived from sticking with the korbanot,
right? Right. It's derived from korbanot. So most Rishonim understand, therefore, that the two examples that we really have of mitzvah haba be'averas are with stolen korbanot and stolen lulavim. So a korban is a d'oraita concept. It seems to. So does that negate Tosfot's answer? Did anyone follow the question? Okay. Tosfot said mitzvah haba be'avera is only going to arrive in derabanan cases. Only going to apply in derabanan cases. But we learn the whole concept from korbanot, which are d'oraita.
It's
a good question. I don't know, but my nafkamina.
I'm not sure. I just feel like
okay.
Like there's a better chance for this korban.
Right. Well, I think the answer is simply that what Tosfot would simply say is Mitzvah haba be'avera wouldn't apply to korbanot without the psukim. Without the psukim, ani Hoshem sone gezel, or piseach, meaning we have two psukim that prove mitzvah haba be'avera by korbanot. But the concept alone, even though it's learned from korbanot, there are two psukim attached. To reapply it to another case, it would be Durabanan. Do you hear what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't... True. It doesn't say... I think it's not even an asmachta, meaning it clearly says by korbanot that a stolen korban is not acceptable. So you have a proof text of that already. Then he's saying from that we learn the concept of mitzvah. It's an asmachta that from that we learn mitzvah ba'avera. Did I lose people? Or
I guess I'm just not sure why it would be like just because if there's something to teach it on a Doraisa level, so the Rabbanan then made a tahana that we should keep it on for a Durabanan mitzvah after that. I'm like,
It's not the most satisfying answer, and Tosfot himself is going. We're going to learn another Tosfot that offers a different answer.
But say it in totally different words. I'm sorry, I'm subjective.
Go.
I think that the Doraita applied it in one specific case, which is korbanot, and that's like one specific case, and then Midrash Rabbanan, like the rabbis took the concept and applied it to some Midrash Rabbanan cases. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean the rabbis could have applied it to the Doraita too, though.
Maybe they could.
Well, maybe the even the other opinions that don't make this distinction, practically speaking, it's actually there is going to be one opinion that says it applies to in a certain case a shofar, which would be a deraita case. So let's learn through the whole thing now. But yeah, so this Tosfot's idea. Obviously, there was a trend to limit it by all Rishonim. Okay, so again, we're answering the question, why does mitzvah haba be'avera apply in certain cases and not others? Particularly when you look at lulav and sukkah, which you'd assume to be so similar, and it's applied by one and not applied by another. So the next Rishon that addresses this point is the Ritva. So I have the Ritva source 5 in the original packet, and then I put another Chidushe Ritva on the top of the supplemental additional sources that fleshes it out better. I want to skip the beginning right now of the Ritva and go 1, 2, 3, 4 lines from the bottom. Oh, I underlined it. V'hanachon. Anyone want to read? Again? All right. Okay. So it seems correct that Rabbi Yochanan requires shinui reshut, and therefore that this is the important part, and therefore negates this because of mitzvah haba be'avera sheha mitzvah goremet kinyan zeh vehotzioto mireshut nigzal. What does that mean? You made a hmm. So what do you think that means? How is he changing? Let's translate what he just said. And how is the Ritva changing the understanding of mitzvah haba be'avera? Shem mitzvah goremet kinyan ze v'hotzioto mireshut nigzal.
You understand
what to do next? Not exact. Well, what does goremet mean? Causes it. The mitzvah causes the kinyan and takes it out of the reshut of the person he stole from. So if you, here's what he's saying. Let's say if you hold that to form a kinyan, you need yeish and you need shinui reshut. At what point is it like fully stolen? Like, I know it's stolen once you take it, but when is it fully stolen? What? So this is what the Ritva is saying, that actually when you take it to do the mitzvah, that's when it really changes from being like branches to now being an object mitzvah. And that's when it's like a shinui shame almost. And through that shinui, that becomes the completion of the theft. In which case, like, he's almost taking the concept mitzvah haba'a be'avera and making it in a very literal way. That, or actually, inverting it, I should say. The mitzvah, instead of a mitzvah that comes from an avera, it's now a mitzvah that causes an avera. When you do the mitzvah, you complete the avera. Let's look at the other ritva from Psachim. He makes it, he describes it in much more clear terms. Anyone down there want to read? No? Okay. You want to read?
Sure. The Anan hat Kushnala become a different. The Rina, the Riot Bureau, the Law Amina Nisha Baba Gadera, Elisha Nisha Messiah, the Kiana, the Kanina. About the Shain Nisha Messiah, the Kanina.
Okay. So, sorry, you want to translate?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we have many cases where we explain this, he says, and many proofs that when it comes to mitzvah haba be'avera, it's when the mitzvah finishes off the kinyan. When the mitzvah completes the kinyan, is when it applies. But when the mitzvah does not complete the kinyan, then no, it's not a mitzvah haba be'avera. It's just a regular case of theft, and he owes him money. He owes him payback. Sorry. V'chol hecha? V'chol
hecha gazal Matza Fuya the Ika Yeish Balin, the Alideha Mitzvah Ika Shinoi Hashem, the Meikra Lachan Mahashra Matza, Inami Shinoi Reshut, Laman Gusava Midraban and the Kushat Mitzvah Hashiv Shinoi Reshut.
Okay, he's going on a lot here, so let's just break it down for a minute. So remember, this Ritva was in Psachim, so he gives matzah cases. So he says, let's say you steal flour and you make matzah out of it. There'll be yeish, and there's already a change from turning the flour into matzah. That was already the shinui before you ever get to do the mitzvah of actually achilat matzah. So in that case, it's not a mitzvah haba be'avera, because remember, we learned this from Rashi already. We already learned from Rashi that if there's yeish plus shinui, anything that happens after that is no longer a problem. So the shinui took place when you physically made the matzah before you used it for a mitzvah. So by the time you use it for a mitzvah, it counts, it's not an issue. However, he said it's sort of weird the way they understand matzah. He says, let's say you already steal matzah that's made. So you and I think of, when we go to the store before Pesach and we buy matzah, we think of it as matzah already. He said, no, really it's almost like lechem at that point. Not that it's not kosher at Pesach, but it takes on the shame matzah when you're like sitting there at the Seder ready to fulfill your mitzvah of matzah. So in that case, you stole lechem, that's really matzah, and the shinui happens through the mitzvah. As you eat it, that's the mitzvah, and that's why it's a mitzvah, and that's why it's a mitzvah haba be'aveira when you eat stolen matzah. Now, just to let you know, the Gemara in Safim says that if you eat stolen matzah, you don't fulfill your obligation. It does not mention the phrase mitzvah haba be'aveira, though. A lot of the Rishonim connect that phrase to it, but it doesn't say it. Yeah. Right, so this is, but that's exactly how Tosfot gets out of it, because it does. Tosfot would say, Ritva, you're saying this is mitzvah ba'aveira, but the Gemara didn't, and the Gemara knew of the concept, so, you know. What's cool, actually, is, like I was, because I searched in the Bar Ilan, so I saw the Rishalmi, it doesn't, in this case with matzah, it doesn't call it a mitzvah ba'aveira, but it says something like ein mitzvah shel aveira, ein aveira shel. It says something like similar, but doesn't apply the concept exactly. So like Tosfot can still wiggle his way out of it, you know. But it's a good point. So. All right, so that's why. So it is pasul. He says it's because it's mitzvah haba be'aveira, because the shinui happens when you are fulfilling the mitzvah. He says inami. Okay, you know what? Actually, let's stop here with this ritva. I think he gives an alternative if you don't want to say that there's shinui. But, all right, it gets confusing because there's another opinion in the Yerushalmi that we didn't learn. So, okay. So that's the second approach. So when does it apply? First approach, Deraita versus Derabanan. Ritva's approach was... It depends on whether the mitzvah causes the aveira to be completed, which obviously leaves us very few cases. How often does the mitzvah actually complete the aveira? How would you explain the logic of the ritva, by the way? Like, why? Meaning, just to bring this into a little bit of a philosophical discussion, I was starting to say this with Tosfot. There are two ways to understand the ritva, I think. Number one, you could say that the Torah does not want to help the thief acquire stolen property through one of its mitzvot. And therefore, it's going to disqualify the mitzvah and prevent the kinyan from taking place. So, again, the Torah would not allow an avera to take place through the help of a mitzvah. And the other read is that the Torah is not prepared to recognize an action, a maasa, that involves an avera as an act of mitzvah. So, which I think is the distinction I was saying with Tosfot, that either from the beginning, from the outset, the Torah is going to nullify and not allow any action to take place that is causing an avera. Tosfot clearly did not take that approach, and he was saying, no, like, it's just that it's not going to recognize it as a mitzvah. The action takes place, but it's not going to recognize it as a mitzvah. Okay. Sorry, I know like there's a lot of opinions and information. I mean, myself, like I have all these notes because preparing this, it's so hard to keep straight in your head. There's so many different ways to view mitzvah habah be'avera, and it's so tied up to the laws of gzela, which are so complicated with yeyish and shinui to begin with.
I think it's a little bit hard to understand because that's not the way we usually think of the avera of gzela. The avera of gzela isn't being cool as someone else's other. You still did an avera like before there was yeyish, before anything happened, like before there was Kuna, like you still have to pay him back, you still...
That is like a good kasha. Like meaning the avera is really at the time of taking, is what you're saying. Not at the time of completion of ownership.
Like, that's how we're used to defining gazela. We don't define gazela as getting to the point of ownership of someone's object that you don't have to return.
Right. I think that he certainly wouldn't be able to take away the fact that an avera starts when you take it. He's adding like a new way of seeing gazela, which is definitely out of the box. But I think it makes sense, because imagine, halachically, it's an interesting halacha that you own the person's object after yeyish, or after yeyish plus shinui, reshut, whatever it is, which I always found extremely disturbing. Like, what if eventually this thief is caught, or you discover where your lost object is, and you want it back? I mean, the thief owns it. You can't demand it back. He just, owes
you. You get back money for it.
He has to pay you, but you want the object. I mean, it's sometimes, like, I think we all know there's certain items that are just, what to us, whatever their monetary worth is, and there's certain items that go beyond their monetary worth. So, now, I don't know enough about the laws of gzela to know exactly if there ever are cases where he would be forced into returning it. I imagine maybe there are some, but certainly most cases he's not. He's, for all intents and purposes, he's the rightful owner after that point. So, there is some completion of an act in terms of the level of stolenness. Like, before he does that shinui, you could get your object back. After, he has fully taken it away from you, literally. Taken out of your reshut, legally. Yeah. Okay. The next approach I wanted to look at was in the Rambam Ravid, source number 6. And this is what, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. This is what Tova came up with before. If you look at the underlined part of the Rambam, Shofar ha-gazel she-takabo yetza she-ein ha-mitzvah ela b'shmiya takol afal pi shelo nagabo v'lo hibihu ha-shome yetza ve-ein b'kol din gezel. If you have a stolen shofar, you are yotzei the mitzvah of tkiat shofar with a stolen shofar. Why? He says the mitzvah is in the shmia, and it's impossible to steal sound. It's not. You would think that shofar is an example of object-based, so therefore it should be mitzvah habah be'avera, but he's basically saying it's not object-based. Because the mitzvah isn't in the shofar itself, it's in the shmiah, it's in the kol. You can't steal kol. So far, nothing too earth-shattering. Let's look at the Ravid, though. The ein b'kol din gezel, Amar Avraham, v'afilu yiebo din gezel, yom trua yie lachem mikol makom. Hachi ita b'Yerushalmi. So, he says, even if you could steal sound, it wouldn't be a problem, presumably, of mitzvah ba'avera, because of the pasuk. Oh, I didn't realize this thing had fallen. Whoops. Because of the pasuk, yom truah yelachem mikol makom, that it must be a yom truah in any way that it happens.
Strange, so lachem is used.
It is kind of interesting, right? like everywhere we've been hearing lachem is used to teach ownership. Here it's almost teaching the opposite. That's because I think when you look at the lulav pasuk, it's like ula kachtem lachem. It's talking about an object, you know. Here it's yom truah, a day of truot. There is no it doesn't say the shofar should be to you, you know. So mikol makom, from any place. Now, I listened to a shiur by Rabbi Adler, who was a student of the Rav, and he explained the Ravid based on what he heard from the Rav, which is that the Ravid says is implying by this that mitzvah haba be'avera only applies in cases where there is ownership or personal possession required, and then it was stolen. Meaning, like lulav, where there needs to be personal ownership, and it was, and yet the ownership is not rightful because it was stolen. Okay, now everyone absorb that for a moment, and then tell me the kasha on that. Tell me what's difficult about what the Ravid's saying, based on what we learned back to our original Gemara of Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera. I know everyone's like tired, don't want to think anymore.
Today we learned Mitzvah Haba Be'Avera for the last days of Sukkot, when you don't have the object, you don't have the...
Precisely. If you remember, the fact that you can't have a stolen lulav on the first days, I don't need mitzvah haba be'avera to teach me that. Lachem, it has to be mine. I already know that. But when did we learn mitzvah haba be'avera? For the last days of Sukkot, particularly when the lachem doesn't apply. So what is the Ravid talking about? The standard case of mitzvah haba be'avera is not one where there's ownership. So you would think his line doesn't make sense. So the Rav continues to explain the Ravid. I thought it was interesting that that even when you don't need full ownership on the rest of Sukkot, there's still an element of lachem. How so? You still need to rightfully possess it in some form. Now, he shows that, what about that's also why you can't have, you know, so obviously it can't be stolen. And mitzvah haba be'avera applies, according to him, when there is a necessity of some sort of rightful possession. But even the fact that you can use a borrowed lulav, even the language of lulav sha'ul, how do we know that when you have something that is borrowed, that is sha'ul, there is a level of ownership? What?
Maybe showing that you're...
Yeah, because you're chayev be'onsin. If something happens to it, you're chayev for it. And similarly, if you're like borrowing a house for an extended period of time, let's say, you're chayev to put up mezuzahs after 30 days. If I'm trying to think of other examples I may have written down.
Why does chayav onsen and chayav alut?
Huh?
If you're chayav onsen, then wouldn't that imply that you're not the baal on it, if the master is the baal on it, or else if you lose your own thing, then like it doesn't really matter.
But you have some. Let's put it this way: if an accident happens to something that you have no shaychus to whatsoever, you're not responsible for anything.
Right. Your thing, your
if friend. You're it, but if you're borrowing it, then like you're just right, just like obviously if it's your own when you're responsible for your own things that you fully own, you're quasi-responsible when you're borrowing things.
The reason you're responsible is because the other guy owns it. It's like his ownership makes you responsible, not your ownership of it.
It's more like
you own something and something happens to it, you're the one who incurs the financial loss. It's not like nothing happens to you, it's like you lost the thing that got messed up.
Well,
like you kind of own it, so you incur that loss.
I think that's how it's how it's conceptually understood, but a very good question would be, what if you're borrowing something that could damage something else, and you don't watch it properly and it damages something, you'd be chayev. So therefore, that's not because you owe the owner something; that's because you're responsible.
Right.
You know.
Also, I think, like, maybe, I hear what you're asking, but maybe you can think of it as not that, like, because the other guy owned it, or the fact that, like, it was in your reshoot enough that you were have anything, like, shows that you have some degree, like, the fact that you have some degree of responsibility towards this object shows that, like, it was somewhat, like, in your reshoot to be watching over.
Right.
And that, like, you completely own it, right? It's not, like, just sitting
right
on your lawn.
Because obviously when you are a renter, you have more responsibility for it. You'd say why? You don't really, you know, because you have more of a part ownership in it now. The more ownership you have, the higher the level of responsibility. But the point is that borrowing is some level of rights, responsibility, ownership to it. So that's how you'd have to explain the Ravid. So I guess your suggestion was an interesting one of having to have, like, shaychus to it or ownership of it. It's probably not the best suggestion since the way we resolve it is, like, requires us to stretch it. But it was still a creative idea. It was still, you know, yeah.
I sort of have a different way of understanding the idea.
Yeah.
And that maybe it's the mitzvah about the vira applies to thing where, like, things where it's where the mitzvah is really inherently about the object. It's
right.
Not about whether people owning things said, like, lulav and sukkah are inherently about those things, or it's shofar, and this pasuk really proves it. Shofar is not really, mitzvah shofar is not about the shofar, it's about that it's a day where there's, you know, the sound of shofar is different than it being
Meaning, even if you could steal sound,
doesn't that sort of go back to, like, gufa vera?
Yeah, it's going back to them saying, even though shofar isn't, like, it is technically an object, but the mitzvah is not really about that object.
But the thing is this, he agrees it's not about shofar, but Rambam had said you can't steal sound, meaning you can't make sound into an object. That's why it's not a problem. But Ravid is saying, even if you can make sound into an object, meaning even if you could apply din gezel to sound, which would then be like defining it as an object, it doesn't.
Right, but the mitzvah isn't the sound. Like, the mitzvah is to have a day of truva.
Yes. But also,
like,
the shofar needs to be
something
hidden. What? No, it is conclusion shofar, though. Like,
yeah,
right.
It feels more like a shofar is like a hefsher mitzvah. Like, it lets you hear a sound, but it's not about the shofar itself. But
part of it is about it.
Yeah,
well, it has to be a
kosher
shofar for it to work, but it's not about, like, looking at the shofar or holding the shofar.
Right, and basically no one actually owns, like, most people who hear the shofar don't own the shofar.
Right, of course not. But you know, it's because even the Ravid is moving away from shofar. He's saying, like, what if you could steal sound? And you're trying to say that. Say what you're saying one more time.
I'm just saying the object itself. I think almost the sound itself is irrelevant because the whole thing is about just creating this day of truah. It's not about.
But he's not saying because the sound's irrelevant. He's saying because mikol makom, because you're allowed to get it from any place. You know, I mean, listen, I don't know. You're right. It sometimes it's like a rishon gives like one line, and then you're like, I don't know how. Certainly, then he's basically just going back to the standard Yerushalmi Rashi approach.
This is a question I'm going to write back. Doesn't the, like, idea that you actually complete the Avera when the Mitzvah happens, like, coming to Kafka with something like Asay Lo Kolos Asay, that, like, if you're actually only doing the lotase that second, then, like, wouldn't it not count anymore? I mean, I thought that was, like, the way Asagopa lotase is understood, like, if they have, like, tzitzis, is that it's you're actually making tzitzis when you tie the things on and create the shadness, but because now it's called tzitzis, it's okay.
But that is built into the actual mitzvah. Like, I think there's a difference, like, when it is, and even the concept of ase docha lo tase usually is not, like, tzitzis is an atypical way that they explain that concept. Like, it usually is, actually, you're right. Sorry, I'm like retracting. I was going to say it's usually even different. Actually, it's usually more like mitzvah abad aveira. It's usually like I have an essay that I have to do. It's going to take away.
I just always heard that the difference was that essay to fulfill a essay happens at the same time, and like it's immediate. Like because you can only fulfill it at the exact same time you're doing the low essay, it's okay. Whereas mitzvah abad aveira, you finish the low essay and then go do an essay from there. That would just be like the way I. It kind of sounds like
yeah,
turning it into.
You know what's different though? Here it's not like I'm passing up a lo tase to do an ase. It's that I started an avera, like which for its own sake. I'm doing an avera through for its own sake, but the mitzvah is allowing me to finish it off to accomplish
it. Independently.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not like two things coming into conflict in the same way, you know? I don't know.
What if, like, someone else's mulav is sitting on the table, and in the moment that you pick it up, like, you're like, I will pick it up and steal it, and you make the breath all at the same time? So, like,
you could just pick the limit so they're picking it up, and then you
pick
it back up.
Fine.
Just a
simple example.
But give me an example of an ase docha lo tase that you're thinking of. Where? There's so many in Shabbos, but like none is coming to mind right now, you know. But all right, let's move on. It's an interesting point. We're gonna see two concepts coming to a head in a similar manner, not with ase docha lo tase. With the Mordechai, which I have on this page. Okay, the let's look on the additional sources. Let's look in the Ritva at the bolded part. The Hikshu B'Tosvot Mikol Makom Kevan Shetekafek Mechaveiro Ha'ika Mitzvah Haba Be'Aveira. So Tosfot asks, like, when you kick your friend out of their sukkah, why is that not a mitzvah haba be'aveira? Like, you're trying to use a sukkah, you threw your friend out of it to do the aveira, it should be mitzvah haba be'aveira. V'tertzu de'lo amrinan mitzvah haba be'aveira, ela bedavar shehu ba lirtzot, kegon korban, shofar velulav ukeyotze bahem. Aval besukkah she'en baritzui, Leka mishum mitzvah haba be'aveira. Okay, so this is like another idea. It's really different, and I think cool, that mitzvah haba be'aveira only counts for mitzvot that are done to please Hashem. Mitzvot that are supposed to be in order to be pleasing Hashem, like obviously a korban is the most obvious example, and like you have all over Nevi'im that, you know, korbanot are supposed to be pleasing to Hashem. So if you're doing korbanot and you're acting inappropriately, Hashem doesn't want them. That's like all over the Nevi'im. It's like kind of a conceptual mitzvah haba be'aveira also there. And lulav and shofar are also things that are supposed to elicit an emotion, so to speak, from Hashem. Supposed to be to please Hashem. So in those cases, that's where mitzvah haba be'aveira applies. Because how can you please Hashem through the act of an aveira?
How
was
the lulav done?
What?
Why? Why is lulav done with Hashem?
Yeah, it's like it's part of the praise and glorification of Hashem. That's like the purpose of those mitzvot.
It's also like for water.
Huh?
It's for water.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like that. It's like you wave it and it's like supposed to come from water.
Oh, you're praying for water? That might be like, I don't know if that's like halachically. I mean, I'm sure you're right, but is that like, has anyone ever heard that before? It might be like.
Because often that is for water and the side is for wind. Like to prevent that harmful wind.
Hi. Still, I don't think that's, that like might be what we're supposed to pray for when we do it, but I don't think that's the purpose of the mitzvah. But, at least not according to the Tosfot here. So, sukkah though, there's no, it's a, you know, zecher for the time in the midbar or other reasons, but it's not, it's not for Ritsui Hashem in the same way, so it's not, it doesn't count as mitzvah haba be'avera. Actually, my husband, I was talking to him about this right before I left, he told me an interesting story also from the Rav. He said that one time the Rav was, I'm trying to remember, like get it clearly, one time the Rav was talking about his father, and his father was the man announcing the tekiot, Rosh Hashanah, and the person blowing shofar was a Lubavitch chesed or some sort of chesed, who like as he's blowing was crying, you know, he's very emotional, and the Rav's father said to him, "Would you be crying if you were eating matzah? Like, get it together." And it's such a telling story, because this wasn't part of the story, but here we have the mitzvah of matzah being contrasted with the mitzvah of shofar and lulav. That shofar and lulav are for Ritsui Hashem. The chesed had a... It's funny, because the Rav is halachic man, you know, and seemingly all halacha should be, like, standard, seen as the same. But even halachically, according to some Rishonim, there's a distinction between different types of mitzvot. Those that are for Ritsui Hashem, like shofar and lulav, and those that are like matzah, not. And that's why maybe, that's why clearly according to this Tosfot, mitzvah haba be'avera is applying to mitzvot that are Ritsui Hashem and not applying to mitzvot like matzah and sukkah and all the and tzitzis and other things that we've seen. Tzitzis is another example in the Gemara where you can't, where it specifically talks about not having stolen tzitzis, but it brings a pasuk again instead of just giving an answer like mitzvah haba be'avera, even though it is an object. So you have to, you know, if you use Ritsui Hashem or one of the other answers, you can explain it away. We're really out of time, but I just to conclude, because I said I'd show that concept flipping it around on itself. Let's just glance at the Mordechai for 1 second. Okay, last source. Kishachal Hoshana Rabba Liyot b'yom echad b'shabbat v'katitzu akum arava b'shabbat v'evu k'sheira v'lo amrinan mitzvah baba v'erahi dehatznan ime tan kasher umayri afilu b'mezid Miditnan avar veliktan upirash riva demetakin gamorhu, mashe nitkanu lemitzvah, visuri daraita have, velo mifsal mishun mitzvah hababa vera. So he starts giving these examples of if Hoshana Rabbah is on a Sunday and the non Jews cut the aravot on Shabbos, you can use them, it's not mitzvah haba be'avera, and another example he gives: v'hu adin imasa akum shofar biyom tov mutar litkoa bo v'chein etrog v'lulav shuvua mechutz litchum bishvil Yisrael mutar liYisrael. So also, someone the first day asked me about tchum. Remember, I don't remember who it was. Even if it was brought from outside the tchum, it's a deoraita prohibition, you can still use it. Why? He's basing this on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and he's saying, because mitzvot lav leinot nitnu. Mitzvot aren't given for hana'a purposes. If someone brought something to me from outside the tchum on Shabbos, and it was for my own hana'a, it's totally prohibited to me. But if it's a mitzvah, the fact that it was brought to me through an aveira, I can still do the mitzvah from it. So I just loved ending this way with the Mordechai, because it's almost, when, you know, we started with this whole idea of why are the rabbis so hell-bent on limiting the scope of mitzvah haba be'aveira? It seems to be such an important concept and idea. So first I thought, well, maybe they really, it's almost like a Baal Tshuva kind of thing. They don't want to limit a person's ability to do mitzvot. You did one thing wrong, we're not going to limit you. You still should be able to do mitzvot. Could be. And they try to limit the scope as much as possible. But this idea in the Mordechai also brings out that the main concept is that because mitzvot aren't for our own personal hana'a, even if it was done through an aveira, we still do the mitzvah, unless it was a mitzvah haba be'aveira. And when you think of the concept of mitzvot lav leinot nitnu, that mitzvot aren't for our hana'a, and we increase mitzvot as much as possible, even when an aveira brought us there, then it makes more sense why the rabbis were limiting the scope, I think, of mitzvah haba be'aveira. Just offers a nice counterbalance. So, obviously, we don't, you know, this is sort of, there's still so much that could be learned or said on mitzvah haba be'aveira, but I hope you guys got a good taste or feel for it, and thank you for learning with me.
Thank you.
Thanks.